Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, a senior Lakers insider for news on that coming in the next couple of days. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about this Lakers preseason and training camp, which is just about wrapped up at this point. We are going to be talking about a decision on the starters that is a little surprising, to say the least. So we'll discuss that. It is a Sunday, and it is the final Sunday before the regular season gets tipped off. So it's time to dive into the mailbag as well. And there are, you know, we have a question from iTunes. We have questions from Twitter. And I'm sure those of you who are watching live will have questions as well. So we'll go ahead and answer as many of those questions as we can over the course of the show as well. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and dive on in. Starting with some kind of macro level thoughts on this training camp that you may have heard a couple of before, but still. So quick reminder, please do hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you guys get your podcasts, preferably on Odyssey. If you guys are watching live right now on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@Lakers Lounge to find the show there. And then whenever you do get to youtube.com/@Lakers Lounge, go ahead and hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, hit that share button, comment away, fire away, all that stuff. All of that really helps the show and helps us continue to grow. Now let's go ahead and talk about this training camp. Now, I won't say where I heard this from or whatever, But literally minutes before I went live, I had somebody say, like, it's really kind of surprising how unseriously the Lakers take training camp, or not training camp, but preseason games, and how they're basically just this kind of extension of practice where the reps are what's more important, and the results of those games don't really seem to matter very much. And, you know, to a certain extent, like, that's how a lot of teams feel about training camp, wins and losses, right? It's just kind of, you know, while your guys are out there, you certainly want the numbers to look good, and you want, you know, positive plus minuses from, you know, your starters and key rotation guys, and the combination of players that you're hoping to play a lot of. You want, you know, good results from those guys while they're on the court. But in terms of, like, wins over the course of training camp, that's not something that anybody, you know, goes into training camp thinking, like, all right, we want to go 4-0 in this training camp. You know, now you don't want to go winless, and you certainly want to be competitive, and you also, like, where wins and losses do matter is in developing winning habits from everybody who throws on your team's jersey. Everybody who steps out onto the court representing your team and your organization, you know, you want them to the best of their abilities, you know, commit to the winning habits that you are trying to, and the winning culture that you're trying to implement. And, you know, that's where, now look, like, there are just, you know, if you have end of your bench guys going against the other team's starters and key rotation players, there's a talent disparity there that you're usually not going to be able to overcome. But if you have, you know, bench team against bench team at the end of a game, and one team's bench team or one team's bench unit is clearly more organized, clearly playing harder, clearly more disciplined, that is a red flag for the team that doesn't have the disciplined end of the bench unit, that isn't, you know, trying as hard as they can and flying around defensively to the best of their abilities. And, you know, for a few years now running, basically dating back to, I would say, the last coach who I really felt like cared about preseason, and cared about, you know, winning habits and winning culture and stuff like that, was probably Vogel. I thought Darvin Ham, especially in his second season, took a lot for granted and was way too overconfident heading into that second season. And I think that JJ Redick showcased a lot of the same concerning behavior that I saw from Darvin Ham in his second season. And so far in JJ's second season, like, it's crazy to me that nobody made a bigger deal out of this, but JJ Redick literally going on vacation instead of being there for the first weekend of training camp was an insane decision. Like, that's just absolutely nuts. And the Lakers extending a head coach after one season where that coach didn't win a championship is absolutely nuts. Like, it's just absolutely insane behavior. Now, my kind of conspiracy theorist idea with that extension is that Jeannie Buss kind of wanted to give JJ and Rob a golden parachute just in case the league basically tells her that she can't run the team when the sale is finalized, and wanted to take care of those guys to the best of her abilities while she still could. But still, it's still crazy that a Lakers coach gets patted on the back in a season where he got his butt kicked in the first round of the playoffs. So, yeah, there's, I don't know, like, the training camp and preseason, and when it comes to building culture and building these winning habits, I was actually pretty unimpressed by that. And I know that you guys have heard that, you know, from me basically all training camp. But you look at a lot of these teams. Denver treated their game against the Clippers like an actual regular season game. Golden State had a really hard training camp. The Celtics had a really hard training camp. Houston, another really hard training camp. And you can go down the line, and for the most part, those teams that have real aspirations this year, OKC had a really hard training camp. Those teams that have real aspirations heading into the season, like their players consistently talked about how hard they were worked in training camp. And maybe the Lakers think they're going to galaxy brain their way through training camp and you know, through prioritizing getting healthy and staying healthy, that's all that really matters for training camp. I don't know, man. That would be a new one. That approach is not something that other teams have gone with before. And, you know, it just kind of goes to JJ. I think he's a little smarter than he actually is. And, you know, he thinks that he can do these things that'll revolutionize the position. And that's the kind of thing that happens when you don't have any experience going into holding that position. But like with not making a sub in the second half of a playoff game, with, this approach to training camp and now starting Gabe Vincent, he is, I think, really susceptible to overthinking some stuff. And I think it's bitten the Lakers a couple of times in the butt. And part of the concern when you have a coaching staff that isn't as widely heralded, an assistant coaching staff that isn't very widely heralded as a really good one, you don't have anybody to step up and be like, hey, JJ, that's not a very good idea. Hey, JJ, this isn't probably the wisest thing either. And there isn't enough, I think, pushback on some of those decisions. So, I walk away from this training camp and I headed into it with a lot of optimism for this upcoming season. I liked the Lakers offseason within the parameters that they were working. But I also think that not all teams that they're competing against worked in those same parameters this offseason. And like, if we're trying to say, like, if the Lakers are trying to tell us that they're really going for it this year, that this is finally the season that they're really going to push those chips into the middle of the table and fully believe in the superstars that are at that headline the roster, you could tell us that till you're blue in the face. But like the Nuggets told us that, and they used a first rounder to go and trade for Cam Johnson.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply. I've realized lately that the products I use every single morning genuinely affect how I feel for the rest of the day. If something feels heavy, greasy, overly makeup-y, or complicated, I just stop reaching for it. That's why I've been loving Primally Pure's new Sun Serum Tinted SPF. It gives mineral SPF 30 protection and enough coverage to make my skin look even and healthy, but it still looks like my skin. It has this really fresh, lived-in glow, and their lip and cheek tint has become one of those products I keep throwing on throughout the day because it makes me look instantly more awake and put together in like 10 seconds. The whole vibe just feels very effortless. Skin first, clean girl beauty, products that enhance your skin. If you've been wanting your routine to feel lighter, simpler, and more natural this summer, definitely check out Primally Pure's Sun Serum and Lip and Cheek Tints.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code podcast at grunes.co. That's code podcast at GRUNS.co.
The Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, really believed in their roster and believed in what they were building last year. And they traded a promising young player in Josh Giddey for Alex Caruso to, you know, fully supplement the skill sets that they had at their in their guard rotation. You know, these teams that, like, we'll see what happens with the Jonathan Kuminga situation. I'm really kind of curious how that's going to go. But like the Warriors, right? They kept on telling their fans that they believe in Steph Curry still, and they still think they can give him an opportunity to win a championship. And they traded Andrew Wiggins and draft capital to go out and bring in Jimmy Butler. And, you know, the Lakers, they pulled off the Luka Doncic trade, which they do deserve a lot of credit for. But we still haven't really seen enough of a track record from Rob Pelinka to build enough confidence in us that he can build a winner outside of those guys. He built a championship team, immediately tore it down, and then made the Russ trade and ended that title window, and then was willing to basically just ride out the title window while also not necessarily accumulating assets either. So, like, I guess for me, it's you know, I come out of this training camp and I ask myself, what did they accomplish this year? They do finally have a starting caliber center in DeAndre Ayton. I'm pretty confident that they have that. Is he an upper tier starting caliber center? I don't think so. Now, you know, when it comes to the other boxes that they needed to check, they needed to get more athletic on the perimeter, and they needed to bring in a point of attack defender. And you thought maybe they did that with Marcus Smart, but he's moving a little stiff so far, dealt with that tendinopathy all training camp as well. So, and now they're heading into the season, and their starting point of attack defender is Gabe Vincent, who's too short to really impact the game in that way. So, like, they can tell us all they want that they're really going for it this year and that they're really ready to compete this year and give Luka a real opportunity to win a championship in his first season as a Laker, first full season as a Laker. You could tell us that all you want, but your actions kind of speak to something very different. And this training camp, like, if you were to, you know, compare it to the other training camps that other teams that are going for it did have this year, it would seem to be more of a training camp that would align with a transition year, right? A gap year. That it was a gap year type training camp this year, where it was like, oh, well, everybody get healthy. We'll just, you know, see what we can do in the games that we do have various guys available. We'll only have one game where we get minutes to work through some of the decisions that we're going to have to make in terms of role and rotation and stuff like that. This training camp to me was pretty underwhelming. And the message that I'm taking from it is that I don't necessarily think the Lakers are going for it, or the Lakers are going to have to prove to me that they're really going for it at some point this season. And if they finish this season and they still have that first round pick in their back pocket, that to me is the action that matters. That to me is the message, the actual message that gets sent this year, you know, in trying to figure out what the Lakers' actual goals are this season. Now, Friday's game was a dress rehearsal, and it meant that it was really worth paying close attention to some of the decisions that were made heading into the game and then during the game and with, you know, various combinations of players and stuff like that. It does look like Jackson is going to be paired with Luka, and it looks like in those lineups where Luka and Austin are staggered, it looks like Jackson is going to be paired with Luka. That's good. And that Ayton is going to be paired mostly with Austin. I think that's a wise call there. Unfortunately, though, that was kind of overshadowed by the decision on the starters, which Gabe Vincent is the fifth starter next to Luka, Austin, Rui, and Ayton. This is a surprising move really. I honestly didn't really get it for a few reasons. So first and foremost, I don't really get it because the Lakers' strength this season, I thought, in their identity this season, I thought was going to be their size and how, and specifically positional size, where when guys are playing various positions, they are bigger than the average player playing that position. And unfortunately, it appears that isn't necessarily the case because they're going to start Gabe Vincent, who is, he's listed at 6'3", but I'm sorry. I've seen him next to guys and I've, you know, he's not 6'3". He's just not. And so like you're going to play a small point guard and then you're going to shift Austin down to shooting guard, which now he'll be a smaller shooting guard. You're going to have Luka now as your small forward. He's a big small forward, but he doesn't necessarily defend big, right? He defends, I think, smaller than his size. Then you have Rui, who I think you could probably say the same about, that he rebounds like a small power forward. And now it basically puts the onus on DeAndre Ayton to make up for a pretty bad defensive unit. And I don't necessarily think that that's a strong suit for him, right? He really seemed to focus on it in the preseason. And I thought there were moments where he looked really good as a defensive center. Asking him to carry Gabe and Austin and Luka and Rui, who were all negative defenders at their position, that's tough. That's tough. And, you know, we saw it in practice against the Sacramento Kings, who are not going to be an overwhelming offense this year. And they couldn't stop them from scoring. Basically, they played pretty much even with the Kings in the minutes where those guys were on the court and while rotation players were on the court. And that was a Kings team that didn't have DeMar DeRozan playing. Russell Westbrook didn't play in that game because he had just been signed. And Domantas Sabonis didn't play in that game because he tweaked his hamstring. So it was a shorthanded bad Kings team that the Lakers played relatively even with. And that's fine if that's your first preseason game of the slate. I wouldn't be worried about it if that was your introduction to preseason. And all right, now we see what we look like there. Now it's time to tweak some things here and there over the course of training camp and over the course of the remaining training camp preseason games so that you can go into your next one and learn even more. But no, that was the dress rehearsal and that was the final preseason game. So now when the Lakers go into tweaking things that we know that they're going to need to tweak, i.e. the starting group, they're going to be doing so in games that actually matter and you won't get those reps, right? You won't have that opportunity to learn about yourself in games that don't count against you, right? The nice thing about preseason is that like you can try these different things. You can, you know, the Lakers played the Warriors this year in training camp. They could have tried that starting group against the Warriors in training camp and decided not to, right? They decided to hold various guys out and take a very kind of conservative approach to training camp. And now when they do have opening night, and the hope here is that Gabe Vincent, I guess, can chase Steph Curry around. He's not going to be able to. Steph doesn't get bothered by guys like Gabe. He gets bothered by guys like Vando, who we've seen bother him before. It's starting Gabe, like just within that lineup, I think they're going to be so bad defensively that they're going to have to be absolutely elite offensively. And they might be able to be that. They did create good looks pretty consistently for themselves in that game, but it didn't really matter because you have to score at a crazy rate just to keep up with the other team that is going to score at a crazy rate against your really bad defense. And then the next issue that you have with starting Gabe is, well, all right, those guys sub out and you're now going to, it's going to be really difficult basically to stagger Marcus Smart and Jared Vanderbilt without both of those guys being on the court at the same time. And if they are both on the court at the same time, it's the inverse problem where your defense might look really good and you are going to have, you know, the Banshee type of approach and identity with that second unit. But with Gabe, or with Vando and with Smart and with Hayes, you're going to be playing, your offense is going to be operating in a broom closet. And however good your defense might be, it'll need to be elite because your offense is going to be really, really bad.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
So technically speaking, it's a balanced group in that, or it's a balanced roster. In that, like, you have offensive and defensive type, you know, strong offensive groups and strong defensive groups, but you can't have both at the same time with the start by starting Gabe. So, yeah, I don't get the decision. And again, it's one of these, it's an example of, I think, JJ Redick overthinking his approach to the rotation. And his coaching staff, his assistant coaching staff, not being either smart enough or fighting hard enough for it to make sure that doesn't happen. I know that people are saying, well, maybe it's just a Golden State Warriors thing. Well, but that, again, nobody does that. No, and it's for good reason. Nobody has a rotating group of starters based on matchup. Because NBA players, over the course of an 82-game season, they're very reliant on habits and regimens, and you know that the game night is supposed to go a certain way for them, so that their body is the most ready it'll be whenever they need the most from their body. And in this thinking that, yeah, well, we'll just start whoever needs to start that game. Well, those guys aren't going to know when that is going to be them or might not be them or should be them or shouldn't be them. And now it makes it so that, like, the only way that this is going to work is if Gabe plays extremely well, which might happen. Look, he shot the ball really well in preseason. But what if he regresses? What if Steph catches fire against a smaller defender? Well, now all of a sudden you just threw your rotation out of whack. And whoever should be starting is going to play fewer minutes than they should have, or their body won't be ready because they probably should have been starting. And for what? You know, for a matchup. And, like, against the Warriors, you don't beat them by going small. You beat the Warriors with size. You beat them by literally beating them. And what the Lakers are basically doing is like, you know, it hasn't worked for literally any other team playing against the Golden State. The teams that beat the crap, like Steve Kerr and the Golden State Warriors, have not lost very many series. You know who they have lost series against? Anthony Davis and LeBron James and big Lakers teams that start Vando to bother Steph, that play Rui to have extra size there, have Austin out there to be positionally big. Those are the teams that the Warriors has historically lost to, not teams that went small or played smaller guys to match up with Golden State going small. By doing that, you've essentially just handed the Warriors the first 5 minutes of the game, the first 7 minutes of the game. You basically just let them win those minutes, because you're just not going to be as good as them doing that. All right, let's go ahead and I'm done ranting. So let's go ahead and dive on into your guys' questions. The first one comes from iTunes, and it is QBreezy12, who writes, with Giannis preferring the Knicks but then lacking the draft capital to trade for him, wouldn't they be able to trade OG and or McCall either to Milwaukee or to a third team for picks when they become available or eligible? Would you rather Giannis expand on his interested destinations to include the Lakers, or for the Lakers to acquire OG and or McCall in a Giannis to New York deal? Well, I would obviously just kind of rather acquire Giannis. It's pretty clear that I don't think the Lakers are going to take building around Luka as seriously as they should until they land that second superstar. They already have the second superstar in LeBron, but they clearly don't feel he is that. So based on their actions, it certainly seems like they are more focused on, you know, positioning themselves for whoever, you know, what in this case, Giannis, than they are in building an actual roster, a fully fledged and thought out roster for Luka in year one. So my number one preference is just for Giannis to get moved, ideally to the Lakers, but for the Lakers to also like start actually building a culture, an identity, a you know, structuring the organization in a way that allows Luka to be optimized, whether they get Giannis or not. Like it drives me nuts. How many years have we basically been completely reshuffling the deck and going into seasons knowing that the team that we're watching on game one is not adequate for the pursuit of the championship that like LeBron and AD were pursuing before, and now that Luka is going to be pursuing? This is like five straight years of basically starting a season with a roster that we just know isn't good enough. So whether it's with Giannis or with OG or with McCall or whatever, my number one preference here is for the Lakers to actually start building out an organizational identity. Like right now, I've said it before, I'm actually concerned that the identity is one of comfort and one of the understanding that there are people who are just untouchable. Like when you go this long and people who should have been held accountable aren't, then people are used to operating under the assumption that accountability isn't actually a real thing that is really valued. So, yeah, I would say that like with when it comes to Giannis, part of the reason that I would be really excited to get Giannis is so that maybe, just maybe, the Lakers could finally start building a championship contender again. We haven't seen them build a championship contender in the offseason in half a decade while they've employed LeBron and AD. Like, it's not like you're the Kings and the guys at the top of your roster were De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, who, like, you were never going to win a championship with De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis. So I could understand the Kings basically saying, like, well, you know, we kind of have to keep our assets flexible for the sake of going out and landing the player who we can win a championship with. I would understand a team like Utah, right? Like, Utah's best player is the guy whose name I'm blanking on. But they're like, they haven't, you know, basically since Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert were teammates together, they've tried to maintain as much flexibility as they possibly can, or that they've possibly been able to, in order to like maintain flexibility and bring in something close to the Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert combination, which at one point they believed they could win a championship with. They know that they can't win a championship with like you know, the we'll see how good Ace Bailey is, and we'll see how good Lauri Markkanen might be, or like what they could be as a combination. But we know that that's not a championship duo. So eventually they're going to move Lauri Markkanen and bring in enough assets to whenever the opportunity presents itself, either draft that player who can win a championship or acquire that player who can win them a championship. The Lakers, that hasn't been the excuse or the explanation for the behavior. The Lakers have had a LeBron who has extended his prime in ways we haven't seen before. And they had Anthony Davis, who for my money is one of the absolute best defensive presences that I have ever seen. Both of them were playing at a really high level the last few years. And the Lakers chose during that stretch to basically like not do anything, neither acquire assets or use those the assets that they did have before to supplement those guys with even somewhat viable rosters. No, it's like Rob just basically sat on his hands, and he could do so knowing that like he was a made man. And what it basically led to is, all right, you do pull off the miracle that is acquiring Luka Doncic in the way that the Lakers were able to, but now they neither have the assets to build around him or decent players already in place when he shows up. And now you're trying to build with basically one hand tied behind your hand, but behind your back that you tied back there yourself. So, I don't know if the Lakers have the assets to trade for OG and Mikal right now, because whenever the Knicks do trade those guys, they need to basically stock picks, and the Lakers only have one first that they can move right now. And I don't think OG goes for only one first rounder. I definitely don't think Mikal Bridges goes for one first rounder, given how recently they just traded for him and used so many more picks for. So I think the Lakers' only hope basically is that Giannis extends or expands his list of teams to include the Lakers. And I would even take it a step further. The Lakers basically need him to force his way to the Lakers, because outside of that, I don't think they're acquiring any of those three guys. Let's go to Twitter and answer some questions from there. I'm just going to go in the order that I see them here. Brian Fritz, how worried should everyone be about the lack of toughness and physicality from this team? I think it's a glaring issue that could affect both defense and rebounding. Yeah, it's one of those things that I think one prism that I've kind of viewed Rob through is through the eyes of an agent, right? And when he was an agent, players got paid by way of scoring, and players, you know, got their, you know, because when you're an agent, right, you literally scout out talent. When you're an agent, you go and you keep an eye on the college ranks, you keep an eye on the pro ranks, and you basically do a lot of work to position yourself in a way that allows you to sign players who will eventually earn big enough contracts so that like your commissions become livable, right? And when Rob was still an agent, the best way for guys to get paid was to go out there and score buckets. And for Rob, I think his scouting eye was always very scoring forward. And I think now when you look at the types of players that the Lakers have acquired, a lot of them skew offensive, right? And I think that is Rob's kind of basketball worldview, is to skew very offensive heavy. So one of the things that I wish the Lakers, it's going to be interesting to see whenever Mark Walter takes over, to what extent he surrounds Rob with a little bit more help, a little more scouting, and intel forward type people. Like if Mark Walter basically tells Rob, hey, we're going to hire you an assistant GM. We're going to hire an actual GM. One who I would hope supplements Rob's worldview, to where, like, Rob is good at identifying scorers. Rob is good at identifying players who will put points on the board. I have no concerns with him in that regard. Where I do have concerns with him is the lack of understanding or lack of prioritization of players who can defend, who do the little things. Because the little things, guys, back when Rob was an agent, those guys didn't get paid. Those guys kind of bounced around the league and did little things, and they would show up to teams, and those teams would win a lot while they employed those guys, but they weren't really like max level players or really, really highly paid players in the way that we see little things guys get paid nowadays, right? The guy winning is how you get paid. If you can consistently prove in today's NBA that you positively impact your team's chances at winning, you're going to get paid, and you're going to get paid a lot. And I'd be really curious how Rob would fare or how he would analyze today's market when it comes to scouting players, because that isn't how that wasn't the market when he was last an agent.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Plus, get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Row. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Row. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Row. Go to row.co/listen to see if you qualify. RX only. Go to ro.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
So the reason I say all this is because, like, rebounding is a little thing, right? Meaning, like, it's not, you can see rebounding in the stat book in that you can see literally how many rebounds that player grabs. But if you're looking at it through an agent's eyes, guys don't typically get paid for rebounding, or didn't get paid for rebounding. You could, you know, diving on the floor for loose balls. Like, Marcus Smart did that in a game the other day. And it was like such a novelty, because, like, when was the last time we saw somebody sacrifice their body in that way for that? It's been a long time, you know? So especially from a Lakers role player, all the Lakers role players have been pretty soft recently. Pretty passive type players. So I would say that, like, you know, I am concerned about the lack of physicality and this kind of softer culture that the Lakers have built, because the one guy who's making these basketball decisions looks at things through the prism or with the worldview of all that matters is stacking buckets. Well, that's not all that matters. And that's not how winners are built nowadays. So that is going to be something that the Lakers, whenever Mark Walter takes over, I anticipate the Lakers will get a lot better in those specific regards, because, like, we've seen it with the Dodgers, where it's really rare that the Dodgers are a bad defensive team, right? And the Dodgers understand that those margins, like, if the Dodgers basically finally a team realized, especially a big market team, realized basically, like, all right, the way that the Rays kept up with the Yankees and with the Red Sox back when Andrew Friedman was running the Tampa Bay Rays, the way that they kept up was by being absolutely elite on the margins, with the understanding that, like, they couldn't go out and land the big fish. They didn't have, the owner didn't okay the budget in a way that allowed those Rays to go out and sign super duper stars. So the Dodgers basically realized, well, wait, if we bring in Friedman and he brings to the table the things that the Rays did to keep up with the Yankees and Red Sox, while also maintaining the ability and opening up the budget to also sign the super duper stars. That's an unbeatable combination. And when I see people whine and cry about how the Dodgers have broken the sport, it really is a pretty easy equation. Be a big market team, but operate like a small market organization. And with the Lakers, like, I think they very much operate like the old Yankees and Red Sox teams that the Rays were keeping up with, because the Lakers are so bad on the margins. And one of the margins that we're being asked about here is rebounding, is toughness, it's defense, it's these things that OKC is elite at. They are the best defense statistically ever. And part of it is you have guys like Caruso, and you have guys like Dort, and you have guys like, you know, Chet, who are elite defenders. But you also have throughout that roster and throughout that organization the expectation of, no, you are not going to not defend or not sacrifice your body for the betterment of the team. The Lakers don't have that culture of accountability, and you know, it's leaked into the basketball product that we watch as well. Gregory Brown writes, I don't believe the Lakers can win another championship as long as Rob Pelinka is the GM. What do you think? I really hope Rob doesn't waste Luka's prime like he did Bron and AD. I think that's a fair concern. Again, we haven't seen Rob build a championship level roster going into a season in half of a decade while he has had Luka, or while he has LeBron, while he has had Anthony Davis. Now he has LeBron and Luka. And once again, it was an off season of excuses and frankly bullshit. Like, I'm sorry. I think Rob is an elite bullshitter. I think JJ is an elite bullshitter. And look, there's a place for that, right? Like, it's valuable to be really good at that stuff. For one's own employment. But when it comes to results, bullshit doesn't get you very far. So I would like to see actual action this year and a follow through on the bullshit to take talking points and turn them into actionable and tangible results. Her wife 504 writes, do you think LeBron will ask for a trade at the deadline? Ooh, man, that's a question. Do I think LeBron will ask for a trade at the deadline? I don't think he'll ask for a trade at the deadline. I don't think he would ever directly ask for a trade. I do, however, believe that behind the scenes and with that stuff, like, he would kind of passive aggressively make life difficult or awkward enough that the Lakers eventually, or in his mind, that the Lakers would eventually just kind of go like, okay, fine, where do you want to go? And that's how, like, so if you're like, I don't think we would ever get, because it would also cost some money, but I don't think we'll ever get, you know, Shams tweeting out report, LeBron James has indicated to the Lakers that he would like to be moved, blah, 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 blah. I do think we would get report LeBron James, you know, or like LeBron will really compliment what the Mavs have built, right? Like, dang, you see what's going on there in Dallas? Look at you. You go, AD, right? Like, look, I told y'all Jason Kidd could coach, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, we'll see those kinds of tweets from LeBron and that will be like the version of him, quote unquote, asking for a trade. But he's way too passive aggressive to actually go out there and like walk into Rob's office and tell him, trade me right now. I don't think he would. I don't see LeBron doing that. John Paul, the never happy man. I don't know. Like, you guys can say this. I was optimistic going into this training camp. I really was. You guys were there. Those of you who like listen and watch regularly, I was there saying like, yeah, I like really liked some of what the Lakers did this offseason. I know this has been kind of a downer episode or whatever, but like I just haven't seen enough from the Lakers this preseason to make me really super confident. Like, there's no way any of you saw anything from this preseason and said championship, not based on what you saw from this team this preseason. Now, do I think there are people who like saw the roster come together or see pieces of the roster or see like variables that if they go in the Lakers' favor that this team could do, like could win a championship? Like, yeah, I bet that there are people who think that way, but not based on what they saw this preseason. Nobody saw like Marcus Smart play this preseason and walked away from seeing him play like, that's it. That is the exact guy that we were missing. Nobody thinks that. Like, nobody thought that, right? Like, I haven't spoken to a single fan or a single person in my mentions who were like, oh, hell yeah. Based on what I saw from DeAndre Ayton this year, the Lakers are ready to take on Jokic. No, nobody said that. Nobody feels that way. So, like, I don't know. Like, yeah, you could call me the never happy man. You could call me the whiner. You could call me any number of these nicknames that you want. But I don't know. I know what a championship looks like. That's the benefit of being a Laker fan. Like that. There are, I've made this point several times over the course of my career, but I think it's worth repeating. All right. I'm going to sit up straight, make this point. In a way, should I zoom? I don't think I can zoom anyway. There are two types of Lakers exceptionalism. One type of Lakers exceptionalism is the actual productive one, the good type of Lakers exceptionalism, where by holding people to an exceptional standard, the Lakers become exceptional, right? Like when the accountability, when the expectation is exceptional, everybody throughout the organization, like if the Lakers are going to win championships or if the Lakers are going to rise to the level that we as Lakers fans expect the Lakers to rise to, it will be because everybody is exceptional at their job. They're superstars at their role, right? That's the good kind of exceptionalism. That's the exceptionalism that helps you land 17 championships over the course of your franchise's tenure or your history. The bad kind of exceptionalism is the belief that by merely being Lakers, you are therefore exceptional. That's how you become lazy. That's how you become comfortable. That, like, that's how this idea that because the Lakers hired JJ Redick, he is therefore exceptional. No, absolutely not. JJ Redick becomes exceptional by surrounding him with an exceptional coaching staff, by paying for assistant coaches, paying enough to make them want to live in LA, able to live comfortably in LA. You make JJ Redick exceptional by holding him to exceptional standards. That doesn't mean extending him after one season, especially when that season ends in embarrassment. The Lakers, their asses kicked in that series. That wasn't exceptional. Was that an exceptional experience for y'all? No. What exceptionalism looks like is what's taking place with the Dodgers. That's exceptional. And the way that they got there is basically by saying, like, we are going to sign the best everything. Players, coaches, scouts, analytical experts, front office personnel, back office personnel, everybody. If you're going to work for the Dodgers, you are the best at what you do, period. But where we see the Lakers, it's like, the genie is of the belief that because people work for the Lakers, they are therefore the best at what they do. That somehow Kurt Rambis is operating at the forefront of basketball philosophy and management. No, fuck no. He was a failure as a head coach. This belief that, like, Linda Rambis is somebody who everybody would be falling over to go out and hire to help run their front office. No. If you leave the Dodgers organization, they're constantly getting people poached. You guys are probably Rams fans too, right? How many Sean McVay assistant coaches get hired? How often does he have to reshuffle his assistant coaches because anybody who stands next to Sean McVay long enough is considered a football genius? We see the same thing with Shanahan in New York, in the Bay, in San Francisco, right? Like, I'm benefiting from it. I'm a Vikings fan. Kevin O'Connell's a freaking quarterback whisperer. And that's because when he was at the Rams, and the Rams hold themselves to an exceptional level at all times, at every level of their organization. If you work for the Rams, if you work for the Dodgers, the expectation is greatness, consistent greatness. That doesn't mean that people don't make mistakes. That doesn't mean that, like, the expectation isn't perfection, because that would be impractical. But the expectation is greatness. It's exceptionalism. And the Lakers, like, the expectation with the Lakers is that, like, you get along with Linda, that, like, you crack a joke and you're a good hang for Linda and Jeannie. And like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm pretty sick of how comfortable the Lakers have become, how good they've become at patting themselves on the back, and how good they've become at making excuses when they don't live up to our exceptional expectations. We have much higher expectations of the Lakers than the Lakers have of themselves, and I'm sick of it. You guys should be too. All right, we got a super comment in here, a couple super comments in here, so I'll go ahead and play this. Fuck Washington! That show actually is a good example of this. The first season of Winning Time was, I thought, really good. I thought the first season of Winning Time was legitimately funny. It told a very clear-eyed story of the Lakers and their flaws. But the second season, the Lakers got involved. Jeannie Buss specifically got really involved, and it became what we now see with the Netflix show that is loosely based on her too. And neither show, like, Winning Time was really bad, I thought, in the second season. And I don't really like the Netflix show very much, because all it is the Lakers basically telling themselves, we are industry leaders. And you're not, Jeannie. You're Dr. Buss's daughter. Linda, you're not an industry leader. You're Jeannie's best friend. Like, you know? And so, like, the show, the Winning Time show, it was really, really good when it pushed itself to be exceptional. But when it, like, lended itself to this internal belief within the Lakers that they are exceptional because they are the Lakers, and it just wasn't a very good show anymore. All right, let's talk. Let's see. Rob Palinka and Jeannie Buss are trash. Says Jeannie didn't deserve, or JJ didn't deserve an extension, full of excuses. And then because Rob sat in his hands, we have a trash bench. Yeah, like, look at how the ends of games go when later rotate, like lower rotation players or lower roster players go up against each other. The Lakers for the last few years haven't been very good, and the end of their roster just hasn't been very productive. And it makes it so that, like, if you have any injuries, you're really going to feel it because those guys at the end of the roster aren't very good. Like, I'm sorry, there are a lot of guys that are getting cut now that I look at and I'm like, man, those guys, that would be a really interesting player who I would rather have over Bronny. Or, man, that's a, you know, last year when the Lakers had like Maxwell Lewis on their roster heading into the season or something like that, it was like, damn, there are a lot of players that I would just much rather have on my roster than Maxwell Lewis. And this year it's a lot of the same, basically, where it's like, dang, that, whether it's Bronny or Dalton or guys at the end of this roster, I'm like, man, I really wish the Lakers had an actual NBA veteran here who like would be able to step in if and when LeBron develops sciatica, or like now you're heading into the season without the margin for error that LeBron presents. And now if Rui hurts himself, now you're like, dang, Lakers really don't have anybody at the wing that I feel super duper great about. So yeah, maybe I'm overreacting to preseason. It's all altogether possible. Maybe I'm just in a shitty mood because the Vikings lost to the Eagles today. Altogether possible. But I had a lot of optimism going into this offseason or this preseason, and was just kind of very, 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 very underwhelmed. On that note, that's going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I will have some news for you guys to share tomorrow, so keep an eye out for that on my socials. That is at Anthony Irwin LA. But until then, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you when I talk to you. How are you doing, everybody?
Today's episode is brought to you by Mercury, radically different banking loved by over 300,000 entrepreneurs. You don't use floppy disks. You don't communicate by fax. You don't use outdated software to ship products. So why are you banking like you do? For ages, traditional banking has stood still, forcing people and businesses to adapt to its slow, clunky process. Mercury was designed to end that. It's radically different banking. Fast, elegant, and it works the way you'd expect best-in-class software to work. You can accomplish just about anything in a couple of clicks. No fighting systems from the 1960s, in-person visits, or phone tag. And no nickel and diming. Because if you don't accept mediocre tools anywhere else in your work or life, why would you accept them for something as important as your money? Head to Mercury.com to apply in minutes and join over 300,000 founders who love Mercury. Mercury is a fintech company, not an FDIC insured bank. Banking services provided through Choice Financial Group and Column NA, members FDIC.